Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. A mask requirement is back for state workers when they go to work, regardless of vaccination status. And Republican lawmakers block the UW system from issuing COVID-19 restrictions. Plus, the field of candidates for the 2022 U.S. Senate race narrows. All of that on Rewind, your week in review for August 6.
Hi, welcome to Rewind. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
So, JR, let's get right into it. Masks are back at the state capitol. Now all state employees will be required to wear one indoors while working. Now, it wasn't too long ago. I believe it was June 1st.
Yes.
Masks just got dropped at the capitol.
And it got reopened.
And it reopened to the public. Now we're in this weird phase again where all these restrictions are coming back. But first, let's just talk details of what this applies to people in the general public when they come into state buildings. It will apply to all executive branch employees in state buildings, regardless of vaccination status. That includes areas of the Capitol managed by DOA, such as the rotunda, quarters, restrooms, elevators, and other common areas. Now, DOA is not mandating the general public if they're vaccinated to wear a mask, but they are recommending it. But if you're not vaccinated, you got to mask up. But this announcement comes as cases are surging at an alarming rate. Now, the governor has been asked about what he's going to be doing next. What type of action should he be doing? He, of course, asked DOA to take this step. But let's first take a listen to what the governor had to say when it comes to taking one step further, possibly vaccine mandates for state employees.
We're looking at all options, whether it's testing every week for those that haven't gotten vaccinated, to making some other requirements. Authority may rest at the local level, but again, having vaccination cards and proof of that is a complexity that doesn't, you know, it's still complex here in Wisconsin. I don't know how they're going to do it in New York City, frankly, but we don't have any immediate plans to do that at the state level.
I think I had.
And we just heard the governor kind of stop short of vaccine passports on the state level. Because, Jared, let's talk about how his powers are very limited.
Yes.
He can make actions within state government, but not so much statewide orders because of what happened in the high court. So talk a little bit about what he's doing, at least what he can right now with his authority.
It's the bully pulpit doing his best to try and drive a message of mask up, get vaccinated, the responsible thing. What's interesting is we had this massive wave in November. We peaked. We were nowhere near that. So let's be clear, we're nowhere near the November peak. Everything kind of bottomed out in spring, a little peak in April, then back down in June. In June, we were below 100 cases, rolling 7-day average. We're now at more than 1,000. It was 1,500 new cases by itself on Thursday, 1,000 for the rolling 7-day average. We are on the wrong trajectory right now. Hospitalizations are up as well. There are 380-some people hospitalized as of yesterday, according to the Wisconsin Hospital Association. All this is going on as we're in this fatigue moment of dealing with COVID-19, right? More than half the state has gotten at least one shot at this point, which is great, but not excellent. People are somewhat fatigued about wearing masks and taking precautions in public. So how do you combat that feeling of, we were told a month ago, we're in the clear, it's back to normal, with now, okay, this Delta variant's causing some issues. You got to start trying to take precautions again. I mean, they're even trying stuff like free cream puffs at
yeah.
State Fair.
Well, who doesn't like a cream puff? I mean,
well,
I guess that's a whole nother debate, maybe for another time. But
I'm not strong pro or anti cream puff, to be honest with you. But it's an example of we're not doing lotteries or financial incentives, but they're trying to find ways to get people to do this. Now, we are seeing nationally people getting the message, it seems like, of like, I need a vaccine because it's Delta variant. The question is, school starts 3.5 weeks for a lot of places, 4 weeks in Wisconsin. Where are we at a month from now when we really get kind of rubber meets the road of kids going back to school, which people really want to see happen, especially me with my two kids. But is this going to throw things off at all, you know, in a month?
And is it going to work, right? I think even the nationwide aspect, too, is that we're going to make all these rules for the unvaccinated people. Either you're going to have to be spaced out. If you're not vaccinated, you're going to have weekly testing type of things. And the hope is that maybe people get, I'm sick of tired of taking a test. Maybe I'll just go get vaccinated, right? But this also just brings back to the politics around masking and mandates. Yeah. You know, several healthcare organizations, big, large healthcare providers in Wisconsin just this week are starting to mandate vaccines. That, of course, is going to get pushback.
Yes.
There are some that just feel that I've personally interviewed this week that I'm not going to work. It might just result in me quitting my job. So I guess where do we see when it comes to the political side of things, JR, how much of this is going to blow up? I mean,
well, you see an example with UW, right? And the Joint Review of Administrative Rules, pushing back on the policies being put in place by the various campuses. So that's an example of you're seeing lawmakers starting to say, this is enough. I heard the word government overreach a number of times this week talking to Republican lawmakers. They feel like this is enough. There's a sentiment of people have the choice of the vaccine right now. It's readily available. They're making their own choice. They know the statistics. Let them live their lives. The pushback from the healthcare community is, okay, well, that's not really what's happening, because when they don't get the vaccine, they spread it. It goes to kids. They spread it to others. Oh, by the way, we're finding out more now that but the Delta variant, that you still can spread it if you've been vaccinated. So there are still risks going along with this thing. We're not out of the woods yet. And that's kind of the thing is, like, when will we finally be free of this? And the message is, well, once we're mostly vaccinated, get herd immunity, then we can relax. But we can't relax just yet with what's going on.
And that's why healthcare providers, too, are thinking if people follow these, the hope is that it will either strongly encourage people to get vaccinated or maybe things will slightly to get better, but remains to be seen. And now, speaking of the politics, let's talk about kind of recap JCRAR actions. Now, it's a powerful Republican-led committee that voted to block the UW system from implementing COVID-19 restrictions on campus. Now, this vote triggers a 30-day window for the system to submit their COVID policies to the committee as part of the administrative rules process. Now, if that happens, the committee could suspend part of those or all of the policies. And shortly, right after this vote, I think just a few hours, UW-Madison comes right out and says, well, we're not going to listen to that. We're going to require masks for all students and staff. Some other campuses, UW-Milwaukee, will require masks indoors. Well, UW-Eau Claire only asks unvaccinated students to wear masks indoors. Both universities are going to mandate regular testing for unvaccinated students. So the big question, JR, is, I guess, will we continue to see UW campuses act on their own, or do you think they're going to eventually submit their proposals to the legislature?
Well, the impression I got talking to people is the Madison announcement was a message of we're going forward. There also was UW-Milwaukee Chancellor sent a campus-wide message yesterday saying we have been affirmed by the system that we have the authority to do this. Now, for those at home who don't know the administrative rules process, it's very wonky. But essentially, state law lays out what agencies can do. There are cracks to fill in, though, sometimes. Like if I'm told I can regulate milk, what about almond milk, right? You have to sometimes propose rules to address these unique situations. What the university is saying, or what Tommy Thompson said, was we have the authority, we believe in state statute, to do this. What the committee is saying is we don't believe that's right. We believe you exceed your authority state statute. Because it's not in statute, in our opinion, you must submit this as a rule. What happens then is the rule goes to the legislature. They can, again, suspend part all of it, but they get power of oversight. Now, the question becomes, what happens when that 30-day window ends? Mm-hmm. From my reporting, I think the university is going to say, sorry, but we believe we have power in state statute. This doesn't have to be a rule. The question then becomes, will lawmakers sue to force the university to do this? If that happens, how long will it take? And why I think that's important is my impression is the university just wants to get through this wave of Delta, the Delta variant. They want kids back in the classroom.
Yeah. Yep. Keep kids in the classroom, which is Tommy Thompson's promise, or has been since
And remember,
COVID
last
started.
Last year, there are all these Republican lawmakers unhappy about kids not being in the classroom. So the university's argument is, you guys want us to be in the classroom, but are taking away tools to make sure it works. Now, Republicans, again, are like, look, these are mostly college kids. They're not in huge risk of getting sick from this, you know, et cetera. The pushback of the university is, but that we have faculty in the room. How many professors want to go in a room full of kids who are not vaccinated and unmasked and teach?
That's, and how many kids we saw last fall, too. There was still gatherings. I mean, these young kids are so excited to go have a college experience, and that's, you know, taken away from them in a sense.
I spent 1 year in the dorms. 1 year was enough.
I luckily only had to do 1 year, too.
Mass gathering. So I get the impression that the university is going to say, we believe the authority to do this, and that the lawsuit happens. Now, And I say if because we all know Steve Noss is a critic of both the university and of COVID-19 policies. The question becomes, is this Steve Noss leading the charge with the caucus behind him? The caucus is behind him and buys in, then maybe you go to court, maybe you file a lawsuit, but do you want to have that fight in court when you have this Delta variant spiking? Do you, are Republicans going to say, no, look, we made our point, let's let it alone, and Obama University is going to say, hey, get us the wave, get us the other side of this thing that's going back downhill, and we couldn't care less what happens, because once we get through the wave, we feel like we're in better shape.
And we haven't heard from GOP leadership yet. They're kind of in this summer recessed period before they come back. And, you know, you talked about how Senator Noss has kind of a record of going against COVID protocols and targeting the university. It wasn't too long ago that he had another resolution to strike down the statewide or the mask order. And then university officials, their response, the spokesman for UW system, Mark Pitch, said he feels like this is a political statement. Also, this sparked a lot of backlash from Democrats on the committee. Let's hear from Representative Lisa Subak in her reaction to right after the vote was taken.
The Republicans on JCRAR are micromanaging the University of Wisconsin and, quite frankly, putting into jeopardy their ability to open up for in-person classes. And I think there is a goal that we all share. And we want to see students back in the classroom. We know they want to be back in the classroom. That cannot happen if the university cannot guarantee that health and safety measures are put into place. It's not just their right to put those measures into place. It is their responsibility. Providing a safe and healthy learning environment is the responsibility of our university. And what Senator Noss and the Republicans are doing today with this vote in JCRAR undercuts their ability to do that. It's a gross overreach. It's mismanagement. And not only that, but it is out and out dangerous.
Madison.
All right, as you just heard from Representative Lisa Subak on JCRAR, very frustrated by the decision, but it's more of a wait and see period right now to see if we'll see more universities ignore these policies and to see if we'll have possible lawsuits down the road. Let's move on to our next topic. The first Democrat out of a very crowded field for U.S. Senate dropped out of the race. That would be Senator Chris Larson from Milwaukee. Let's take a look at what he raised. He just entered the race in late May, I believe. Larson raised about a little over $51,000 between getting to the race and, there it is, May and June 30th. He had $20,000 cash on hand. Now, comparison to some of his competitors that were in the race, Lazary had $1 million, Nelson, $406,000, Godlewski, almost $243,000. And right after this, it was, you know, he made the announcement, but in the same announcement, he throws his support behind Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who is the front runner in a poll that we'll get into a little bit. Let's take a listen to Larson's reasoning behind stepping down from this crowded field.
There is a lot of people in this race, right? I think there's more than a baseball team now. So just having too many cooks in the kitchen made it really tough in trying to get across the state. That and seeing somebody who has been a personal friend of mine for close to a decade, somebody who lines up with me ideologically in trying to not just push against Republicans, but push against Democrats when it's necessary. I just didn't have the heart of trying to go out there and try and make him a villain when we're friends.
Now, Larson kind of was talking about how he didn't really see a path for him, right? Mm-mm. Him and Mandela are friends. They're both in Milwaukee, and he just wasn't getting that traction. So just what's your take on him entering and kind of shortly leaving? Wasn't too long of a run.
Well, we talk in politics about lanes, like, right? What's your lane as a candidate for your stratosphere, the voters, right, in the Democratic primary? Larson got in with surprised people because they didn't really see a path for him with these better-known, better-financed candidates and with Barnes waiting in the wings. We all kind of knew Mandel was likely to get in. It wasn't a sure thing in the spring, but it's kind of likely he was going to get in. Basically, they're competing for the same candidates. They're both from Milwaukee. They're both progressive. It was interesting that the second Larson got in, or not long after, he was endorsed by some progressive groups. Like the day that Mandela got in, some of the same groups endorsed him and did a dual endorsement. That was not a great sign for Chris Larson in terms of, like, can you break through the noise? Now, you mentioned that poll. I want to be upfront. I'm a polling geek. in the weeds about polls. So I take a lot of the grain of salt. You're talking about trying to pull Democratic primary voters in Milwaukee County, which is a very difficult electorate to reach.
Yeah.
We're talking, it's a year away from the primary. That said, you know, the poll is a gauge probably of enthusiasm and name ID right away. And Barnes at 39%, Larson at 15%. Nobody else cracked double digits. And oh, by the way, 20% were undecided. What I take away from this poll are a couple of things. One, Barnes has gotten the initial surge in Milwaukee County, which is an important segment of the primary vote for Democrats. In the 2018 governor's race, it was 21% of the primary vote, that county alone. Add in Dane County, up to past 40%. The third county, third biggest county for Democratic votes in the primary is?
The third?
Yes.
Waukesha?
Yes. The only person ever gets that.
Come on.
Very Republican county, but a lot of people live there. Anyway, so with this, Barnes has got some enthusiasm in Milwaukee as home base. The hitch for the table for this is Alex Lazary, who is a Milwaukee, well, on leave from his job as Milwaukee Bucks executive.
Right.
At 4%. Again, early poll, people aren't spending money yet, but he's a Milwaukee-based campaign. Now, he's trying to spread out beyond Milwaukee and be more of a statewide candidate. He's got the most money, but he's not getting traction, at least from this poll, in Milwaukee County. Again, early poll, money hasn't been spent, but if I were Alex Lazary, I'd want to see my number higher when I've got a lot of high-profile Milwaukee Democrats endorsing my campaign. I've been raising this money, a lot from out of state.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather be higher than where I was in this poll. And with Larson, you can see he had, I don't want to say an avenue, but you can see like he had an attraction of certain Milwaukee County voters, right? Ran for Milwaukee County Executive twice, state legislature for a decade, was in local office before that.
And we also know he's now not going to, there were some rumors that he might throw his head into the lieutenant governor's race. Maybe they just flipped flip positions,
gonna
but
run.
He clearly said he's not interested in that. He's going to run for re-election.
So now what? Well, we have Darrell Williams, who, new candidate for in the race for Senate. I mean, we went from 9 to 8. Now I think we're back to 9 with a 10th, probably getting in Stephen Olicara, who's expected to announce before too long. But Darrell is appointed by Governor Evers, Administrator of the Division of Emergency Management over at Military Affairs, announced today he's going to run. Now, this is a very low-key announcement, like roll out a video, a press release to some media outlets. He's not well-known. It's a very crowded field with a couple of top-tier candidates and a lot of noise underneath. And what I don't know is at some point, will this crowd thin out on its own because they see, I can't raise money, I can't break through. You know, for some people like Shantia Lewis, she's a Milwaukee alderwoman. You know, she's first high-profile black woman I've seen run for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin. Is she making a name for herself, or does she have an avenue?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Emily's list has endorsed Sarah Galuski. So for Shantia Lewis, what's your path? What's your lane to break through? A lot of these kind of
candidates. People on the list have never ran before either, you know? So you kind of got a mixed bag in a sense. We did, you know, no one knew it was actually going to grow again, right? But I think over the next few months, we'll just see where the fundraising levels are and if people are either going to stick with it. And then I think we're already looking forward to that first debate, right, JR?
Which brings an excellent point. Will anybody take a shot at somebody else?
That's the thing, because we've seen a lot of these pledges. Like, I remember the 2018 cycle, we're going to pledge not to, you know, diss my opponent type of thing. We're going to all, you know, but what's the fun in that, right?
But does it get nasty?
I think it has to be, in a sense, though, to stand out.
But do you take the shot? Do you have the money to take the shot? And then if you take the shot and you win, how do you bring that person's voters into your camp post-primary? I mean, let's talk about Mandela Barnes, the first high-profile black candidate, you know, top tier. Not, you know, nothing against Shantia Lewis or Darrell Williams, but guy's lieutenant governor, right?
Right.
Sarah Galuski, a female candidate endorsed by Emily's list. If you're taking shots at certain candidates and you tear them down, those are core constituents of the Democratic Party to win election in November. If they're not happy with you, then what? So that's something to kind of watch. And then, oh, by the way, the National Democratic Caucus, would they come in and say, hey, this is not working out, guys. We need to start like refereeing some things or even like trying to push people out this primary. Not saying it would happen, but keep an eye open next summer if it gets nasty about what's going on.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, let's move on to what's going on in Congress. basically the big talks right now is the infrastructure bill. I should still say it's pretty massive, even though it's been changed multiple times after weeks of negotiations. It's going to be nearly $6.2 billion over 5 years. That's according to the White House. Here's a look at what it includes. About $5 billion for highway programs, $225 million for bridge replacement and repairs, nearly $600 million to improve public transportation, $79 million to expand Wisconsin's electric vehicle charging stations. That's interesting right there. And $100 million to expand broadband coverage. Now, a lot of these proposals in here, too, is something we've even heard Governor Evers and his budgets and what the legislature is trying to what the legislature has tried to do on their own, especially even just broadband, right? That's been an issue for a very long time. I guess, what do some of these bullet points, what would they do? I mean, what does it mean for Wisconsin to get a chunk of this change?
Look at this, $5.2 billion for highway programs. It was $1 billion for 3990 from the state line to Madison. It was $1 billion for the zoo, $1 billion for the Marquette. Mm-hmm. You're talking the possibility of doing some massive projects that are in the pipeline for Wisconsin. If the money comes, then how do you get agreement about what to get done? There's always a rub there. 94 East-West in Milwaukee, that's the next big project of the pipeline. That's maybe not quite $1 billion right now, but I-41, there's an expansion project up there. I mean, you can do stuff. But the locals are going to want to, they want their money too for
they
local roads.
They want a piece of the pie. They want a piece of the pie.
So there will be a difficult discussion in the Capitol how to divide that money up among these big, massive projects and the local roads, which aren't in great shape in some places.
Mm-hmm. And we also had on our graphic too about U.S. Senator Ron Johnson already announcing that he will vote no. He would rather seen he tried to propose an amendment seeking to prohibit, cancel any contracts for physical barriers or border security measures that are already funded. That was, of course, rejected. Now, Ron Johnson's kind of had this path of saying no to a lot of things since President Biden, you know, the COVID package, yep. The relief checks, all of that type of thing. I guess we're seeing polar opposites on this infrastructure bill, but when we even hear in the state legislature, things like broadband and fixing Roses Bridges shouldn't be a partisan issue. I guess, why is this such a big divide in Congress, or is it just the polarized politics in it?
Polarized. Ron Johnson might run for election next year, might not, we don't know, but he is part of the resistance to Joe Biden. I mean, that's a lot of it is. And Ron Johnson himself, like not that long ago, about he hasn't been successful addressing the debt and deficit, which were his calling cards and ran in 2010,
mm-hmm.
There's been a renewed emphasis on those things with Ron Johnson since Joe Biden took office.
And we'll see if it's how others vote as well. But, you know, I even talked to Congressman Grothman, Congressman Style. They're just not big fans of how much it's going to spend, but we'll see where their vote will lie. And this package appeared to be on track for the Senate package, which is also a rare occasion to be passing the Senate, and it could be coming this Sunday.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's just recap, I guess, because we were off for a little bit. We'll kind of look at last week and look ahead. So last week we wrapped up an extraordinary special session. And what happened there, JR, is that both sides didn't get what they wanted.
a common theme in the Capitol this session.
Yes, it was an attempt by Republicans to override a veto by Governor Evers. And then, of course, Governor Evers fought back against that, tried to overshadow their veto overrides by calling a special session to invest millions back into education. That's been a key aspect of his for a while. But let's just, I guess, kind of just recapped it there. But no surprise there, right, that both sides went in wanting something and left with nothing.
Republicans want to emphasize that they believe the enhanced federal unemployment benefits, where they're $300 bucks a week, expire September 6th, I believe, that they are holding back the economy and people get back in the workforce. They keep highlighting, like, all these businesses that are not able to find employees. They're putting pressure on Democrats to take a position on this. Evers called a special session on education funding to put pressure on vulnerable lawmakers, because to the governor's folks, he's called these special sessions on all kinds of things, from guns to police reforms, and Republican leadership comes in, gavels it out, and goes away. They want to try and use this opportunity to put more pressure on kind of the rank and file, mm-hmm. about trying to take a position on this stuff. It's going to be in a mail piece next fall in vulnerable districts on each side. Beyond that, it's a little more kind of political theater, really.
And in a sense, it also gave us something to report on, right? We thought they were not going to be coming back until September, October, but here we are. We got a little tidbit of them.
That's why they called the special session extraordinary, especially because they have a chance to do the override on this bill because mm-hmm. it expires September.
They're not it's back not, it was now or never type of thing, you know.
They come back September 28th, I think, for regular floor session.
End of September. Also, we had an election update. This goes on to the growing fight about whether or not there was fraud, possible fraud, mm-hmm. in Wisconsin's election. The update there is that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss appointed Justice Gableman to oversee, or he was promoted, I guess I should say, to special counsel in looking into this investigative probe into how the election was conducted. You actually just kind of got an update from another lawmaker who is fighting for the same thing, that is Representative Branchin. What did you just learn as of today about what she's trying to do?
So remember, there are like multi-heads of investigation.
It's hard to keep up, to be honest. So. That's why I think I went a little too fast there.
That's all right.
There's two.
Gableman is the Speaker Voss's pet investigation. You have the Audit Bureau doing its own investigation or review. It's more of a review, I guess, audit of the 2020 election. And now you have also the Assembly Campaign Elections Committee doing its own piece of this, right? And Voss had appointed Representative Tusser at the time in November of last year to begin this review of the election. He changed over from chair to Branchin. She's taking that baton and she's really run with it. Now she is talking about she issued subpoenas for election materials from Milwaukee and Brown counties. The reason they're important is because Republicans are very unhappy about these private grants that this group, largely funded by Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder, put into some 200 communities in Wisconsin to help pay for election costs last year. The bulk of the money, though, went to about six cities, happened to be the biggest in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. all said to vote Democratic. She issued subpoenas for records from Milwaukee and Brown counties. She said today that she's issuing subpoenas, quote, as this first step towards a full cyber forensic audit of tabulators and inspection of the physical ballots from November 2020 fall election. Now, why that's important. The word forensic has become the buzzword in Republican circles about reviewing the election, right? What's a forensic audit? I am not entirely sure. Depends who you talk to.
I Googled it. I tried to get the definition.
But it looks like some people, it's getting each ballot and doing like a scan, a look to see if there are any like irregularities, all that kind of stuff. Well, Robin Voss last week during that extraordinary special session day was asked about this in Branchin's call, because she had made noise last week about she was going to do this. And his quote was, I feel like my colleague Rep. Branchin is misinformed about what we are doing in Wisconsin, and so they're only doing a forensic audit. So again, forensic in the eye of the beholder. But the big takeaway is there's an inter-Republican fight right now about what to do.
What to do, yeah.
And how to do this. Robin Voss is kind of stuck. Don't forget, the eve of the Republican convention this summer, Donald Trump ripped Robin Voss and Devin Lemahieu for not doing enough. Oh, and Chris Kapinga.
And that's what he also said when he said misinformed. He's like, I think my colleague is also misinformed like President Trump, because Voss fired back about President Trump when he said, you guys aren't doing enough. You know?
And Voss is stuck in the middle. All the leadership is stuck in the middle because you have a very vocal part of the Republican base who is convinced that the election was stolen, that there were fraudulent ballots, etc. Most people aren't there. And as long as they're stuck up on 2020, they're not moving past that. It's an issue for them. And oh, by the way, if that vocal base is not taken care of, placated, satisfied, whatever word you want to use about what happened in 2020, will they turn out in 2022? The winds blowing right now are good for Republicans. It's still a year and 2 months away to the election. So mm-hmm. I read nothing into what's happening right now. But if these winds can be the same way they're going, it could be a good year for Republicans. But if they don't turn out, if this base doesn't turn out, I don't care if it's 4%, 5%, 2%. We're a purple state. If you lose 2% of your base in an election that's nip and tuck, you are in trouble. So you got to figure out a way to make those guys happy without losing the suburbanites who are already like not fans of Trump anyway.
And,
they're in a tough spot.
And losing that excitement about wanting to vote and trusting the system. They, you know, a lot of Republicans, especially Speaker Voss, says the goal of this is to instill trust back into our election system. But then you have the other rhetoric that tells you it's stolen, your ballot doesn't count. So it's a very tough messaging that we saw also right before the election with some of President Trump's allies in their races.
And don't
forget,
Democrats are like, hey, this stuff is all off the deep end.
Let them go.
They're using it as a message of their base of, look, hey, guys, if you don't turn for Tony Evers next fall, this is what could happen because they could control the governor's office and legislature and do all these things that you don't like, you know, Georgia-style, Texas-style bills that are coming to Wisconsin unless you guys turn out next fall.
Exactly. Well, JR, we got a little bit left. Let's talk about the stock.
Oh, we can't forget. One more thing that happened last week. State Party Chair, Andrew Hitt.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
It was a little busy for a slow week last week.
It was.
But Andrew Hitt is leaving as State Party Chair. told me that basically he is a volunteer position, has a full-time job, three kids. A volunteer second job is kind of tough in life.
Yeah.
I got an email last night, Paul Farrow, who is Waukesha County executive, former state lawmaker. His mom was lieutenant governor.
I was just going to say, lieutenant governor.
And also now the finance chair of the state party. He's running for state party chair. That process is executive committee of the party meets and picks the party chair. They're supposed to meet September, but they can meet at 10 days notice. So keep an eye out for calling of a meeting to elect a new chair. Mm-hmm. I have not heard anybody else looking to run against Paul right now.
I haven't either. Yeah, I've asked around. But
so, but yeah, just a little more news. That's it.
Yes. All right. How about now let's get to the stock picks, JR.
So rising lobbying. It was a weird first 6 months of the year in Wisconsin, the capital, because you had kind of this COVID pandemic still there, but we were kind of getting back to like normal. It didn't hurt lobbying. Lobbyists spent $18 million in the first 6 months of the year to influence the capital. That's up about $132,000 in change from the first 6 months of 19, the last time we had a budget for lawmakers. It's just noteworthy that the cap was returned to normal.
Yeah, even if there's more people wearing masks.
Yeah. There, one hitch, I did talk to Wisconsin Manufacturing Commerce, for example, the state largest business group. They were the number one spender again. They're perennially the number one spender in lobbying, about $400,000 this first 6 months. They say they spoke more to aides than they did to legislators this period they would normally would. So a little bit different. Also, there was a hangover from COVID. Remember the last day the state Senate was going to meet in March of 2020 was
yes.
canceled. There was a do-over on dozens and dozens of bills.
Of bills. So and we're seeing a lot of them kind of come up again, too.
So that's part of the effort as well for some groups.
Right. Okay.
Next, so Milwaukee. Milwaukee was invited, along with some 20 other cities, to bid for the 2024 National Convention, which, on the one hand, sounds great, right?
Sounds great.
Milwaukee.
Will it happen?
Milwaukee did not have the best experience of 2020. COVID kind of took away the chance of being the spotlight, right? Like, this was going to be Milwaukee's chance to prove we are a top-tier city. Mm-hmm. We belong with your New Yorks and your Chicagos and your Tampas for having these big events. Never got the chance. Now, the thing is, though, I've called a number of Milwaukee people that I know last week, and I can't find a single one excited about the idea of bidding for this convention. The reason is they raised all this money, $43 million to put it on. They spent most of that money, and they got not little in return.
Yeah.
Don't forget, too, 4 years ago, like, you had all these things going for Wisconsin. One, Trump had won Wisconsin by 22,000 votes just a little bit before that. Dems are committed to the idea of rebuilding a blue wall, right? Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. Tom Barrett was, you know, run for re-election. We were pretty sure. So you had kind of secure or solid leadership in Milwaukee that you can count on being there. Alex Lazary led, in many ways, the effort to land the convention. Fast forward to now. Alex Lazary running for U.S. Senate. Georgia and Arizona are the shiny new objects for Democrats, right? Because Biden flipped those states. Can he do it again? There are all these things. Oh, and Tom Perez. He was state party or national party chair 4 years ago. His wife's from Wauwatosa. He got married in Milwaukee. He talked about Wisconsin quite a bit. He's not there anymore. There are all these things that Milwaukee caught lightning in a bottle 4 years ago to land the convention. Even if they wanted to, I don't know that they would be the city to go to because so much has changed
so
in
much.
4 years from what was going on before.
Hey, at least got an NBA title, right?
That's right.
We still have that energy and excitement.
And the thing is, Milwaukee just proved what it can do with a massive crowd downtown
exactly.
with the Bucks run and the Deer District.
Right.
I mean, you could imagine a national convention having thousands of people watching big screen. I don't know they're going to bid for the.
Yeah.
In the end, they may put up a half-hearted bid.
I know. I'm going to just say I would like it to come here, though. I mean, who wouldn't like to cover it? But, yes, it was a disappointment for many Milwaukee officials. But, you know, even me calling probably some of the same people, you know, they're a little unsure
yeah.
right now when it comes to getting the money to pull it off.
Yeah.
Let's just recap real quick your last stock pick. And
following Amy Pekacek, the DWD secretary, there was an audit came out last week, another thing we were on the air for, but basically found that DWD was not processing these claims as quickly as it should, or the adjudications of claims as quickly as it should have. It reinforces the issues at DWD. Remember, she was brought in because Caleb Frostman was basically pushed out by Governor Evers to fix things. Republicans, one, are not confirming a lot of Evers' appointments right now.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Thompson, DOT secretary, the vote out committee 5-0 twice. So he made the floor.
Right.
We're getting to a point, I know it's kind of crazy to sound, but we're in August of 2021. Evers' first term ends in like 15 months, 16 months. I get the impression Republicans are not, A, happy the idea or enthused about going to confirm anybody right now because of that. And two, these issues at DWD, they want to highlight them. It's political for them as well because they can reinforce to people there's an issue at DWD, it's an issue of management, and therefore Governor Evers should give people pause at the elections next fall. So
and it's going to be a huge part of the whatever Republican comes out of the woodworks to challenge Evers, because we're even seeing from the Wisconsin Republican Party, they're one of their main bullet points when it comes to hitting Governor Evers is the DWD issue and those unemployment claims right at the peak of the pandemic. Delayed of people just trying to get their paychecks.
So. Absolutely.
And all the other mishaps, I guess you could say, within the agency. All right. Well, that will do it. Thanks, JR.
I'm JR Ross.
And I'm Emily Fannin. Thanks for watching.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.